Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
It's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast, part of the burgeoning PodcastDetroit.com network. And our final guest of the day is Keith Schoenberger. He is an expert in intellectual property law with the law firm of Young Basile. Keith, you wanted to talk a little bit today about how you make something eligible for patent protection. And since we have a goodly number of entrepreneurs and startups in the listener base, I'm sure people are interested in that.
Well, that's a beautiful thing. Well, specifically, I'd really like to focus on some recent developments in the area of patenting software and sort of related method technologies. So thanks again for having me on the show, guys. It's always great to get a segment on you. In our February call, I talked about the history of software patentability and focused on this test that we have in place brought to us by the Supreme Court via a June 2014 opinion. This has been the test since that opinion came out. It's two steps for determining whether or not software or other types of similar technology are patentable under U.S. patent law. The first step asks whether or not the invention that's being claimed in a patent is directed to an abstract technology, an algorithm, a formula, some kind of scientific law of nature, things like that. To the extent that we do have an abstract concept, the second test asks us to consider whether or not significantly more than the abstract idea is discussed throughout the claim, whether or not as a whole the claim is directed to more. This is all fair and good. The problem is the Supreme Court did not really place limitations on what abstract means or what significantly more means. And so for the last couple of years, we've been left, doing our best trying to figure those things out for ourselves. Thankfully, however, there have been some important developments in the last few weeks.
Good.
So what's changed?
Well, again, although the two-step test still stands, we have somewhat of a better understanding of at least one of the steps. At least we think we might. Last month, the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit decided a case of EnFish versus Microsoft, which involved a patent infringement action brought by EnFish against Microsoft. The patent technology here related to a self-referential database, which is a special kind of computer data structure that is actually able to include all data entities for itself within a single table where column definitions are provided by the rows. This is kind of in contrast to maybe similar technology for a relational database model that uses relationships between multiple tables. The gist is it improves, or it's supposed to improve the speed and processing power and what have you of the computer that's operating on it, operating it. The district court had held that this patent was invalid under this two-step test. However, the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit last month reversed that decision, indicating that actually because the invention solves a software-specific problem and it operates to actually make the computer work better, that it is not abstract after all. This is significant because this is the first really important piece of case law that we have that says that even though it's software, it's not necessarily abstract. Up until now, the inclination has been that software, unlike hardware, like an LED screen or some kind of actual circuitry component, software is program code written by a programmer. It's executable, but it's really, when you boil down to it, some kind of algorithm or combination of algorithms. And that's why this case from last month is so significant.
And because it was so recent, we don't know if this Court of Appeals decision is being, if they're looking for leave to appeal to the Supreme Court yet, right?
Well, I'd be very surprised if Microsoft didn't want to pursue this fight any further. This is a very welcome information for the software patent community. I bet you, though, Microsoft's attorneys are feeling the opposite.
Yes. And this is this a Ninth Circuit? Is that out west where Microsoft is? Is that where it was filed, or where was it filed?
This was the Federal Circuit. I believe the case was heard in Texas, but I actually may be mistaken about that. I apologize.
Okay, yep, not a problem. Yeah, I was just curious because I know some, you know, some circuits are more business friendly or IP friendly than other places, right? I mean, there is some difference. That's why we have a Supreme Court, is to sort out those differences.
Well, there can be, you know, certainly at the district court level, district courts of Texas do have very plaintiff-friendly judges, and so you'll see a lot of patent infringement actions brought in that area, just because it's so advantageous for plaintiffs to speak in front of those judges.
Gotcha. Huh. Okay, so what that means is that what you can patent as software just got broader in a sense, right?
Well, in a sense, and, you know, here's the funny thing about the law. It's somewhat of a gray area, isn't it? So we had this great case, EnFISH, that came out for software practitioners, again, unless you're counsel for Microsoft. Only a few days later, however, another case was decided, coincidentally, by one of the same judges as the EnFISH case. This was TLI Communications. This case, by distinction, talked about kind of software for recording digital images and then classifying and administering the digital images based on a classification. So you'd think that, perhaps there's some similarity here because we're still talking about a logical way for storing data, manipulating it, albeit on a general computer. However, the TLI case was decided differently from EnFISH. It was actually held that the patent in this case was not valid because it did not pertain to patentable subject matter. This creates somewhat of an interesting dichotomy in software patent and just patent law generally, which is, do we have to consider, is the claim invention something that makes a computer work better versus are computers merely being used to implement some kind of task? So unfortunately, where we thought we had some good ground for a few days, this TLI case came along and, you know, pushed us back towards uncertainty.
Interesting.
So getting back to the technology, what was the self-referral database? How do you pronounce that?
Self-referential
database. Yes, I could do it, yeah. So special that the court, the EnFISH case, deemed it not to be abstract.
Well, essentially, what the court said was that it was an actual improvement to the computer because it was almost a new type of logical data structure. A typical model that was used previously, and as I think I mentioned a moment ago, was a relational database for indicating relationships between tables that can be used to store different fields of data. But in contrast, the self-referential model included all of the data entities and structure within a single table. And so the court thought that that was patentable and non-abstract by virtue of the logical implications, but also because of the improvements to the computer that implements the database. Namely, it improves the processing power, speed, functionality, and access to data.
Right. It's also a new way to store data, right, in a table?
Yeah, well, that was certainly the patent holder's argument.
Right.
Absolutely. But, you know, as you mentioned a moment ago, the question stands, which is, you know, for how long will EnFISH be, precedential? Almost immediately after the case was decided, the USPTO actually released a new memo to examiners, which indicated not only for the EnFISH case, but also for TLI, that both of these opinions are very important for patent examiners to understand and to be used for adjudicating patentable subject matter questions while examining applications.
Hmm. So it's already going to have an impact then?
Already. It's a good thing that we're working fast. Some practitioners around the country have perhaps become frustrated with some sort of a lack of guidance in this area. So the fact that the USPTO is working so quickly to try to, resolve holes wherever it can fill them in, mm-hmm. it's appreciated.
Absolutely.
Okay, so what do you think is in store for software patentability in the future?
That's a great question. Hopefully there will be more delimited definitions of what actually constitutes patentable subject matter. Per this two-step test, we have the questions, is it abstract, and if so, is it significantly more? Right now, we're kind of relying on the courts to figure out what each of these things mean. In theory, a great thing, but the issue, as you said before, is that we have different courts applying different standards throughout the country. And in the absence of Supreme Court or legislative impositions, we may be left without any clarification. So hopefully we'll have some meaningful legislative reform or highly presidential clarification. Thing is, we may not expect the important change for some time.
Right, because it would have to make it onto the Supreme Court's docket and then have oral arguments and then, wait weeks or months for a decision, right?
Either that way, or if we go the legislative route, it has to actually make it through Congress, and we all know how that goes.
Yeah. Nothing.
Well, I suspect if Microsoft is opposed to this, they have a few dollars in the bank, so they could keep this going for a while, right?
They probably could. However, I'd hasten to say that this was the only basket in which they have their eggs.
Yeah, they have a few things going on, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it.
All right. So your office is located where, Keith?
Our main office is in Troy, Michigan. We also have offices in Ann Arbor, downtown Chicago, Philadelphia, and Palo Alto, California.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. And if folks want to reach you or reach the company in general, what's the website?
Sure. Our firm's website is youngbasile.com. Spelled out, that's youngbasile.com.
All right.
And again, my name is Keith Schoenberger. I am happy to speak with anyone who wants to reach out to me. My direct dial and email address are both on the website. But our entire team is spectacular, and I invite you to reach out to us with any questions you may have.
Yeah, and how many IP lawyers do you have there?
I think we have about 35.
Wow. Okay. So, and several of you specialize in technology, I know, right? Tech law?
Oh, absolutely. The vast majority of us are patent practitioners. We have backgrounds in a diverse range of fields, from chemistry to computer science, engineering, mechanical engineering, and everything in between.
And you yourself, if I recall, have a computer science degree, right?
That is my background, yes. However, I do have experience in other areas as well.
I want to thank our guest here. It's Keith Schoenberger of the intellectual property law firm Young Basile, and that wraps it up for another edition of the M Squared TechCast. Until next week, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast. We'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.